This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, good. So, Parshas Bahar. Three pieces I'd like to share with you. The first one is something I came across in the writings of Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. It's a fabulous, fabulous piece. He makes, as ever, an idea which you know, you've never thought of before, and he just has a very fresh take on things. If you think about it, let me read you, in fact, I'll say it 1,000 times better than I can say it. I'll read you his opening paragraph. Parshas Bahar consists of a single chapter that, despite its brevity, has a transformative impact on the social structure of Klal Yisrael and provides a unique solution to an otherwise intractable conflict between two ideals. What are these two ideals? Freedom and equality. Isn't what he says. Much of human history has illustrated the fact that you can have freedom without equality or equality without freedom. So you can have freedom without equality, that's an open market economy, laissez-faire economics, no restrictions, that's freedom without equality, or equality without freedom, which is some form of communism or socialism or something. But you can't have both. They seem to conflict with each other. The powerful insight of the Torah in this week's parasha is that you can have both, but just not at the same time. So, and therefore, okay, time itself has to be part of the solution. So he gives an example. Imagine the following scenario. You have two tribes, the north and the south, and they have different economic models. The north tribe, when they sort of begin their whole journey in life, they decide to sort of split up their economy, their land, and everyone gets a portion. And then they decide there's no rules. The only rules that the elders of the community will sort of ensure is that everyone keeps their promises, that rules are kept, and there's no theft and things like that. But basically, you have to work your own land, and if you're successful, then so be it, then great. You become wealthy, and those that aren't successful, then so be it as well. And time moves on, and some people, through hard work, good luck, whatever it may be, they become very successful, they buy the property of others. Some people fall on bad times. And then after a period of time, whatever it is, after 50 years, 100 years, you see that generally that tribe, that north tribe, has succeeded tremendously. But there's been casualties. There's some people who are very poor. Some people have died through malnutrition or whatever it may be. The south tribe, they divide up their property in equal portions. And they have to share, it's like a kibbutz almost, the old-fashioned kibbutz, where they have to share all the productivity of their work. So they put it into some communal kitty, they get equal shares, and the benefits of that society is that everyone survives, everyone gets a share, but the downside is that people feel very frustrated because all my individual hard work doesn't come back to me. There are some people who are not working as hard as me, and that's not reflected in my reward. There are some, and there's no benefit for my enterprise. But the positive is that at the end of, when you stock take, at the end of 10 years, 50 years, whatever it is, no one has actually died because they're sharing the kitty. But there's a bit of frustration. Effectively, he's describing these two models, an open market economy and socialism and communism. So what does Parshas Bahar have to do with anything about this? So he says something very interesting. If you think about it, what is the Torah perspective? The Torah perspective is, on one hand, we recognize that hard work is provides dignity. It's important for a person to enjoy the fruit of your own labor. But on the other hand, to recognize that wealth is not just a privilege, but a responsibility. And therefore, the Torah has a system that every 7 years, you sort of reboot the system and you can provide some form of equality. And every 50 years, when you have Yovel, also in this week's parasha, you reboot it even more. So for example, in the Yovel year, all the ancestral land goes back to the original owner. So I may have been very successful in those 50 years, I may have made good business deals and bought lots of land and become very wealthy, perhaps at the expense of others who are struggling. But come the 50th year, come the Yovel year, all the land now goes back to the owners. So you're rebooting, you're sort of perfecting the imperfections of an open market. That's effectively what Yovel does. Moreover, in the Shmita year, all debts are cancelled out. So you're not going to be locked in the terrible chains of debt forever, because come Shmita, the loans are wiped out. For example, you have to sell yourself into slavery. So again, come Yovel, you go free, or come Shmita, whatever it may be. So therefore, there's the Parshas Paha is effectively offering a solution, as he puts it, to these two intractable problems. Let's just see some of the sources inside, because this is borne out in the Navim as well. You take a look in the first box. If you're listening online, please email me at j.golker@gmail.com. The Pasuk says in Shmuel Aleph, in Perek Ches, Vayomer Shmuel, he's talking the first time a king was requested by the Jewish people. So Shmuel says, you can have a king. Because Baruch Hu tells him to have a king. But just bear in mind that you're exposing yourself to the corruption and the trappings that a king could get involved in, the trappings of power. He may take your fields and your vines and your olives. He'll give it to his servants. And he'll make wealthy his people. So you've got to be very careful that without sort of unrestricted rights are dangerous. However, the Pasuk talks about in Parshas Bahar, the word Ochiv appears 5 times. Striking. Why? Because the Parsha is telling us that you've got to look at society as brothers. Imagine you've got your own family, and one of the brothers falls on hard times. So the other brothers are going to get together and help out. Well, if you think about it, that's Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is an extended family. So the Pasuk says, "Ki yomuch ochicha u'morcha me'achuzoso bo gala ha'karve lo v'gales memker ochiv." The Torah is repeating the concept of ochiv, of brotherhood, to remind us that effectively throughout this parasha we're all brothers. We've got to look at each other, there is a responsibility. And that's what Yirmiyahu says. If you look at Perek Chof Beis in Yirmiyahu, the bottom box of the page, the Pasuk says, "Hoy boina beisa b'lo tzedek." He's talking about a father and a son. The father was Yoshiyahu, one of the great kings of Klal Yisrael, and his son was Yehoyachaz. So Yirmiyahu is very critical of Yehoyachaz. He says, "Hayboina beisa below tzedek." He builds his house without tzedek, without righteousness. Va'aliyosov below mishpat, and his upper chambers without justice. B'reyehu ya'avod chinom. He makes his friend work for free, without pay. And the high he doesn't give him. That's the bad son. The father, Yeshio, however, in contrast, he judged the cause of the poor and the needy, and then it was good. And then he says something very interesting. What is das osi nu'um Hashem? Knowledge of me? Knowledge of me is helping the poor. It's an amazing concept. It's a stunning idea that the Navi is saying. He's saying that Judaism is not interested so much in theology, it's interested in practice. You want to know what Das Hashem is? You want to know me, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Go help the poor. That's Das Hashem. So what you see from this week's parasha is an amazing concept, this intractable clash between these two values, to have equality without freedom, or freedom without equality. The solution is in Parshas Baha. Now, how that applies in the 21st century with an international, complicated world economy is hard to know. But the concept, the principle is there, that you have freedom, you have open markets, and we encourage people to succeed and to work hard and to enjoy the fruits of their labor, but to understand that wealth is a privilege and a responsibility, but at the same time, there are corrections to an imperfect system that you can reboot through Shmita, through cancelling out debts, through unlocking the chains of debt, through releasing avodim, through returning ancestral land back to the original owners. So it's a correction within this imperfect system. Amazing. Very interesting idea. Okay, let's go. Now, the next idea, a bit more similar to what we normally have, our normal fare, is an idea that I saw in the writings of the Migdash HaLevi. The Migdash HaLevi was Rabbi Yosef Tzvi Duna. That's Abba Duna, Dayan Duna's late father. So he's got a sefer, Migdash HaLevi, where beautiful sefer, and he comes up with a very interesting idea. There are two key halachas in Yovel. In this week's parasha, it talks about the Yovel, the Jubilee year. And there are two key halachas. What are they? The Pasuk says, first box in paragraph 2, Yovel hi, it's the Jubilee year, Shnas HaChamishim, Shana Tiyeh Lochem, a whole year, Lo Sizriv, Lo Sikzriv, Sficheh, Lo Sivot, Sres, and Zoreh. So one rule is that you can't work the land. It's basically a Shmita year, which is tough, because if you've got seven lots of Shmita, year 49 is going to be Shmita, and that means year 50 is also going to be Shmita, so you've got basically 2 years in a row where you can't work the land. The second halach is the return of the ancestral land. So when you came into Eretz Yisrael, everyone got land, and you could buy, and you could sell, and you could do whatever you want, but at the end of 50 years, it will come back to you. So whenever you sell land, or whatever, it's always leasehold, it's not freehold. There's no such thing as freehold. The freehold is you can't buy something freehold. Now, these two halachas, are they connected in any way, or are they just two random halachas? L'chorah, they're not connected. One halacha is you cannot work the field during the Yovel year, and the second halacha is that all the land goes back to the original owners. Two disparate halachas. But it says the Migdash HaLevi, they're actually very connected. Let's go through it, a beautiful piece. Im nisboinim, if you think about it, nimtza, it transpires. Ki b'shnas ha-yovel, yeshnom shnei inyonim shenim. There are two separate ideas. Asher b'mabat rishon, through the first perspective, eilom nuroim kol kesher, oishaychus b'neim, there's no connection between them. Reishis, first of all, b'shono zu chuzrus hasodus l'balehen, v'avodim yotzim l'cheirus. The first halacha is that the land goes back to the buyers and the slaves go free. V'shenis, and the second halacha is shona zu asur b'avodas hakarka k'moshnas hashmita. The second halacha is you can't work the land. Seemingly two disconnected ideas. Achein, however, his bainus mamika Yosef. If you look more deeply, tovi yosol de maskon, you come to the conclusion ki yeshne davka keshe hoduk b'yoser ben shtei mitzvot. There is a strong connection between them. V'loizu b'vad elishal ma'aseh hein mashlimas achas es reyusa. One complements the other. Next paragraph. When a person gets his field back, that field, let's say 30 years in, he had to sell his field. He was desperate. So selling your property, that's the last measure of last resort. You're not going to do that. But he was desperate. He had no money, so he had to sell his field. So for those 20 years until Yovel, he's chalashing, he's waiting for the land to come back. When he comes back, there's no limit to his joy. His natural tendency will be, as soon as he gets it back, Shmita comes along, the Yovel year comes along, I mean, he'll want to rush out into the field, start plowing, start sowing, start working his land again. So he can enjoy the fruits of his work. And he'll do whatever he can. To make up for all the lost years that he sold it. Ulam, hine dafka b'shar zu, dafka at that time, when the Yovel year comes and the guy is chalashing to get back to his field, the Torah stops him and says, Hamtein, wait! You can't work your field. It's a Yovel year, it's like Shmita, you can't work the land. Shekein dafka b'shar zu. Is dafka in that year, the year where all the land goes back to the original owners. Choshev lahadgish, the Torah wants to emphasize, for lahazkir, and to mention, ki einonu bale habayis shal ha'olam, we're not the balabatim in the world, v'chi kol asher lanu shayach l'ribeinu shel olam, everything belongs to Hashem. B'ritzoso hu noisin lanu, with his wish he gives it to whoever he wants to, es harishus la'avid esotaseinu, he gives us the permission to work the land, for lahanus and priyam aleinu, and to enjoy the fruit of our work, and he instructs us to hold back from the working of the land, for lahuza asodas b'barosam. An amazing idea. The two are connected. You're chalashing to get back to the land which you had to sell out of pressure, and you're desperate to get back to it, and just at that moment you want to start working the land, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no. This is my land. It's emphasizing the point that actually this land is my land. I own the world, I control the world, I run the world. And actually hold off another year. At the very point in time when he's chalashing to work and he can't work, he's given that message. So says Rabbi Yosef Duna, you see the two ideas are very much connected. Okay. Now the last idea I saw in the lovely sefer of Rabbi Yaakov Bender on Chumash, he says something very, very interesting. Again, one of the key themes of the parasha is Shemitah. Now the Pasuk says something very interesting. Take a look at the first box in paragraph 3. You have the Shemitah year and you don't work the land. Pasuk Chav, interesting Pasuk. And if you shall say, what are you going to eat in the seventh year? What are we going to eat in the seventh year? We didn't sow. We haven't gathered in the crop. Says the Pasuk, I'll give you bracha, you'll get plenty of bounty, etc., etc. What a strange way to sort of construct the Pasuk. It should have just said, it's not telling a story. It's just say, these are the halachas of Shemitah. When it comes, the Nosnaris period, when the fruit comes along, you can't commercialize your land. You can't work the land. End of story. And I'll give you a bracha in the seventh year, in the eighth year, whatever it is, in the sixth year beforehand. Why are we expressing this halacha in the form of a question? And if you say, and if we say, it's a very strange way of expressing this idea. And many ask the question. I've seen it in the Noam Elimelech. The Noam Elimelech says, Rabbi Lizhensk, I was there last week, the famous Noam Elimelech of Lizhensk, B'shem Achi HaChosid, he quotes his brother, Rabbi Zisha, yeah, the two famous brothers. But he quotes his famous brother, Rabbi Zisha, Yesh Ledakdik, Heyosh Yator Yotz B'kan Midarka, Shederach HaKro Lichtov, Ezeh Yitloshen. The Torah is going out of his way here to write something a little bit different, a little bit extra. The Pasuk, Afilu Ois Achas, Vali Dezem, the Torah is Kamakushas, Avel HaKash Yelo Nichtov Be'atzim B'Torah. You're writing the thing in the form of a question in the Torah. Just say, you'll get your extra bracha. Why is it expressed in the way? So Rav Bender takes such an interesting perspective on this. You know, he says, it's okay to have questions. The Torah is telling us, I know how you're going to feel. You're about to come to the seventh year. This is your parnasa. We're so distant from an agricultural lifestyle, it's hard for us to really get into the head of the farmer. But the Torah is telling us, the farmer's going to be anxious. He's going to be nervous. How am I going to put food on the table? I can't cultivate, I can't sell as normal. Anyone can walk onto my land and pick my fruit, and they have as much rights to it as I do. So the person's going to feel anxious. You know what it's saying? The Torah is telling us, if you have doubts and questions, it's okay to express those doubts and to express your concerns. That you're not grumbling, you're not grievance, you're not complaining against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're just articulating your concerns. There's a famous Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara says, Pasuk in Mishlei, Daiga Belevish Yasichena. So the Gemara gives a couple of explanations what that means. One of them is Yasichena La'achirim. What does that mean? I once heard from Dan Erentre, Shalom Fushlema. He once told me that my wife is a therapist, so this is her field. So he once told me that the root of all therapy, of all psychology, is this Gemara. When you have concerns, you've got to just speak it out. You've got to articulate them. Now, of course, a therapist is trained to listen, to ask, to explore, to help, but the main benefit is in the very articulating of the concerns. And that's exactly what the Torah is saying over here. If you've got concerns, express them, articulate them. Don't bottle it up, don't keep it inside. An amazing thing. I mean, the last few years with COVID and everything else, and schooling and everything, it's important to let the kids articulate whatever their concerns are. It's very important to give them forums for it. And Rav Bender quoted an amazing insight of Rav Hudna, a well-known Gemara. The Gemara says in Pesachim, Daf Nun Amud Aleph, Omer Rebbe Ach Bar Chanina. Says the Gemara, Loi Ka'olam Hazeh Ha'olam Haba. This world is different to the world to come. What's the difference? Ha'olam Hazeh, in this world, Al Basurois Tovas Omer Baruch HaTov HaMetiv. When a person has some good news in this world, you say HaTov HaMetiv. Basuris rois, but on bad news, Omer Baruch Dayan Ha'emes. You say the Baruch of Dayan Ha'emes. But in the world to come, Kule Hatov Ameitiv. The only Baruch that you make is Hatov Ameitiv. What's the normal explanation of that? That in the world to come, when you look back, you actually realize there's no such thing as bad. What you thought was bad is actually good. So there's only one Baruch to make, Hatov Ameitiv. Says Rav Huna, what you see from here, that if someone does say Hatova Meitiv in this world, it's not that he's trying to be a tzaddik and he's pretending that everything is good or thinking genuinely that even the bad things are good. A person who makes Hatova Meitiv in this world on something which is bad, it's a bracha levatala. That was your footnote's take on this Gemara. A person who makes Hatova Meitiv on something bad that happens in this world, it's a bracha levatala. In other words, if something bad happens, recognize that, express, I don't understand it, it's difficult, I'm finding this hard, I feel uneasy about this, I'm anxious about it, whatever it may be. But that's okay. And that's really what the Pasuk is saying. A person is concerned, Shemitah's coming up, etc. I understand you feel anxious and concerned, but express, articulate it. And that's why the Torah went out of its way to express this in a very unusual format for the Torah standards. Very interesting, very 21st century way of looking at psychology. To not bottle it up, but to express it, to have a forum to express it. Say, okay, so let's just summarize. What are the three ideas we spoke about this evening? The first is that fascinating idea of Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, that when you have a clash, this intractable problem between the clash of two ideals, freedom or equality, I can't seem to have both. Either you have freedom without equality, which is an open market economy, but that comes with downsides. You get people, we're living in a world of tremendous inequality. I think he writes that today in the 21st century, every single day, 30,000 children die because of malnutrition, because of lack of medicine, whatever it is. That's where we're living in the 21st century. That is freedom without equality. On the other hand, having equality without freedom, all the drawbacks of socialism and communism. So there seem, and history, and even today, you've got two different models. What model works best? There are pros and cons. What Parshas Bahar is telling us is that you can't have both simultaneously, but you can have one after the other, and you can have corrections of a freedom without equality model. That every 7 years, every 50 years, you can have some form of correction to the distortions of the free market economy. Okay, for the second idea, was the idea of Yosef Svidun, a very beautiful idea, that these two seemingly random halachas of Yovel, the two halachas of Yovel, that the land is like Shmita, you can't work it, and the land goes back to the original owners. Every Yovel seems to be disconnected. The answer is they're very much connected. Because when the person is chalashing to go back to his land, the land which he sold under tremendous pressure and duress, and he's chalashing to go back to it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, this is my land. And that's what really Shemitah, ki li ha'aretz, it all belongs to me. And it's telling him that ultimately this is all my land, don't think it's yours, and ultimately HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. And then this last idea of Rabbi Benda, v'chisomer manoich v'ashona ha'shvias, what are you going to say? An unusual format for the Torah to express it in this way. But the idea is that it's okay to have doubts, to have questions, to express our concerns. We don't have grievances against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're just articulating our concerns. An amazing concept. Say that. Okay, we'll leave it.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.